Broadcasting live from our Westlake studios overlooking the great city of Austin and helping you maneuver through this waning dystopia, it's episode number 261 of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Coming up this hour at 12:45, the Crap Bag has some good news and bad news from the world of boxing. At 12:30, the state of Texas is on the verge of allowing college athletes to make some money. And in mere minutes, we have some college football bowl projections. And I have a bone to pick with an unknown workplace thief. I'm Trey Elling. And sitting across from me is a Waxahachie native and level-headed Aggie who may speak your death into existence if he doesn't like you. It's Chad Hastings.
You damn right. Hope you're having a good Tuesday. I definitely want to hear about the possible workplace thief. Before we get to that point, let's throw a couple of little sports nuggets out there. So we'll pretend to be a sports talk radio show. I admit it. I do end up liking it sometimes when athletes get after each other. If you have not Googled the Brooks Koepka video of him eye-rolling Bryson DeChambeau, cussing at him. Golf Channel has let this secret video get out that wasn't supposed to get out. Go check it out if you have not done that. So that is there. Also, we have an update from the NFL on we're making players pay for changing their numbers, Trey. This one comes right to my front doorstep because I'm a Cowboys fan.
Is there a fan blowing in there?
There is. Do I need to turn it off?
That is loud, yeah. We probably need to turn that down at least, if not off altogether.
Where is it?
Okay.
All right. Sorry about that. That was distracting.
So Jalen Smith, Cowboys linebacker, is going to change his number from 54 to 9. He wore 9 in college. Apparently, he wore 54 because 5 plus 4 is 9. He's has strong feelings about 9.
It's that Notre Dame education for you.
That's it. And Trey, apparently, he has such strong feelings, he is willing to deal with what this story is calling a mid six-figure price tag. Because remember, they have to buy out the inventory, basically, of 54 jerseys and T-shirts. That's another part of this I didn't realize. That follows NFL rules. So had he done it next year, he pays nothing. But the fact that he's doing it this year means he's got to pay. When I hear mid six figures, that's, what, 500 grand?
That's the number that I go to.
That's a mid, right? So let's say 300,000 to 600,000, somewhere in there. That's crazy. So Jalen Smith loves number 9 that much. And he did ask Tony Romo if it's okay if he wears it, and Romo said he's fine.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Tony did wear number 9. Yeah, we're entering a weird era of football, and I'm okay with it. I think it's going to be cool to see guys wearing all sorts of different numbers, but it is going to take some getting used to at the NFL level.
It is. Patrick Peterson's going to be one of those guys that we know already has a single digit, and now you got a linebacker like Jalen Smith. I want these guys to be able to wear whatever they want. I like that they're expanding the idea out. And, heck, we fall in love with some of these linebackers and corners and stuff when they're wearing single digits. So why not just have that number carry through? I got no problem with it.
I think Leighton Vander Esch is considering a number change, not necessarily because he's passionate about a number, but just to try and start with a clean slate with Cowboys fans.
I would, yeah. Yeah, just explore different numbers.
Not even number 5 or even 10. Just go right. A totally different direction altogether from that 5-5.
Well, they let him wear 61, maybe just kind of try to blend at some level.
Maybe he can wear 54 so people mistake him for Jalen Smith.
There you go. That could work too. So a couple of notes there to get us started. We'll get into some college bowl projections coming up here. Where might the Longhorns be bowling? And we do have some NIL updates for you and discussion today. Hopefully a couple fun discussions coming for you also. Our Tuesday conversation with Jeff Ward at 1. But Trey, I hadn't heard about this. This wasn't a part of our show meeting. There's a possible
Sometimes I have to spring some things on you at the start of the show, Chad. This is one of those things.
Possible thief in the building? What happened?
So you know that most every day I make my lunch here. I go to the Westlake HEB at the start of each week, perhaps make a second trip at some point midweek to get the necessary items to allow me to save a little bit of dough while making myself a healthy lunch. And the one thing that I'm splurging on in terms of an item that isn't necessarily all that healthy for me, but it's not the most unhealthy thing in the world, and it adds a little bit of enjoyment to what is otherwise a pretty boring salad for me each and every day, is the cheese that I purchase, I'm going to say once every couple of weeks, and spread it out all over my salad. That cheese would be feta, Chad.
Oh.
And I've come to realize over the last month now that somebody, without asking or without mentioning, has been stealing my feta.
Somebody's fingering your feta?
I hope that they're not putting their fingers in this feta. It is in a container that allows you to just take the top off and spread it out over whatever.
Oh, it's like a sprinklable kind of cheese. Know what you're saying?
I mean, it's feta crumbles. But so hopefully if they are scooping the feta out of the container, they're doing so with the spoon at the very least. But I got to say, it's a little bit frustrating to buy a fresh container of feta late last week and open that feta today to put it on top of my salad and see that there's just like crumbs of this feta left. And there was at least half of the feta in this container when I last used it. And it wouldn't have been yesterday. It would have been on Friday, the last time that I used this cheese. And somebody has decided that it is okay for them to use this cheese. Like it's a communal feta. When that's not the reason why I necessarily bought this. That cheese is for me. I'm willing to share it, but you need to ask first. Mm. And this gets into a common problem that we have in the workplace, not just here in this office, but in offices across America. People thinking that the office refrigerator is like the refrigerator they shared with their slob roommate in college or something. That's not the case.
No, it's not. It's very frustrating. Now, during the whole freeze in February, some rules went out the door, which can be understandable. But in a normal society, we can't assume those things. Did you have any kind of label on it that told everybody it was yours?
I don't need to label my feta. You just need to understand it's not your feta.
I totally understand. I understand this. I would never finger the feta. I'm not the guy that would go after another man's feta. But sometimes people label their food and it still gets taken. For some reason, we become cave people at work every once in a while with certain foods, certain things. I can't believe that somebody would go after the fancy cheese.
It's not even fancy.
At work. Fancier? I mean, it's fancier.
You hear feta and you assume that it's maybe a bit fancier. It's not American cheese. It's not the ass end of the cheese-making process that we Americans have, for whatever reason, taken as our own. It's regular cheese. It just looks a little bit different from what we're used to with cheddar or American or Swiss or provolone. But it's not some highfalutin cheese. It's not some three milk cheese from Italy.
Right.
It's freaking feta, man. I'll buy you your own container of feta. Just stop stealing mine.
We've already had a listener that has turned the show off because of the way you're pronouncing the word.
What's the problem?
They have anti-Brad Kellner'd you.
What's the problem here?
Apparently the way you're pronouncing feta is bothering them.
I just pronounce it like you do, feta.
It feels like you're throwing a nice heavy TH in the middle of the word.
That's how the word is pronounced.
I understand that. I'm just saying it's...
Oh, let me guess. A lot of you go Dirk Nowitzki, huh?
Ooh, let's hope
A lot of you Mavs fans go Dirk Nowitzki. Yeah, well, I like feta, so I respect the feta for what it is.
Hopefully they don't go there. Hopefully they won't go there. Somebody's asking, maybe was it the dog from the Sunday crew that took the feta? Do you think they let the dog into the refrigerator?
Oh, we have some dogs that beg around here, but I don't think it was a dog. I think
No.
It was a human. Perhaps it was
good.
A human who gave some feta to the dog, but the dog is not responsible for that. That's the human who made the decision to open the fridge, grab the feta, and give it to the dog.
Do you think there are offices where people are so into this discussion, they literally put multiple cameras up so you're seeing everything? Like, dude, I've never heard of our office has never gone to this level. Do you think there's an office where they do that, where they have full cameras and they go back and look at footage and try to figure out who took whose cheese and all that?
I'm assuming that yes, that does happen. Like people go to, what did it used to be back in the day, with the place where they sold spy cams, where you could literally go buy something that you just mounted to the side of the microwave and you can actually see what's going on. It records to a cloud service. I've thought about doing that. I've also thought about hiring a hitman to just sit there in the kitchen and wait for somebody to grab the feta without realizing that they're there and then just send a message to that person. But we're not going to go there just yet.
Yeah, so what I've learned in this particular business over the years is just I've gained a healthy distrust for anything that happens when I walk out the door. So I try to leave as little, if not nothing, in the building that's actually important to me. Because over the years, I've watched way too many things get stolen, misplaced. I can't explain it. And I just choose not to deal with any of it. But you should be able to, obviously, to do this. So now we're going to have to come up with like a labeling thing. The problem with you labeling the food, though, is I feel like your label will be long and drawn out. It will involve the words right now. It will involve a lecture. And that might get your food eaten quicker. Like, they may get mad at you because of the lecture note, and then you're going to not do what you're trying to do.
Maybe I should leave, like, a little tape recorder. Like, tape it to the top of the feta.
I don't think that's going to work either.
Maybe that'll help my message get across here.
Are you really about to take my cheese right now? Is that what you're about
you
to do?
You understand there are consequences of stealing somebody's feta. You aren't careful. You're going to find out those consequences. You know, it's interesting that you say that, though, because just about everything that I bring into the office for lunch stays in the brown paper bag or the plastic bag that I loaded in from HEB.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that has remained out over the last month, because it otherwise would be moving from bag to bag, and I'm like, it's cool, I'll just throw it in the back of the refrigerator and people will understand it's not theirs and they won't use it up down to the crumbs. Oh, I've left crumbs. It's like leaving that last paper towel on the roll.
Right.
That's all mangled up and it's covered in paste. It's a worthless paper towel, but somebody leaves that one there so they don't have to replace the paper towels. They have literally left crumbs of feta that I can then sprinkle on the last little bit of my salad. It's not even enough to enjoy the feta, mind you. But because it's out of the bag, perhaps that is what is leading this person or these people, because it could be a conspiracy here. There could be multiple people at play that leads to them justifying using some feta that's not theirs.
Yeah, maybe you just put everything in a bag because people are too lazy to go into a bag normally. If it's out, they'll have it. By the way, today is National Brown Baggit Day. So, if you're out there and you're trying to be like Trey, you're trying to save money, you're trying to bring, food into work and not eat out all the time, today is your day. Just be careful. Understand that sometimes martial law applies to the refrigerator at work, and in a lot of ways, there's not much you can do about it.
I was always more of a brown bag person than I was an actual lunchbox person. I realize it's wasteful. You're creating more trash that way. But there was something about not having to worry about that lunch pail the rest of the day when you just bring everything in the brown bag and things are loaded up into plastic baggies. Or perhaps there is a little bit of a container, but it's a disposable container. The brown bag was always the way to go for me.
Somebody said they had the issue with someone eating desserts at work. So I made some extra special X-Lax brownies, put them in the fridge, case closed.
Wow.
Yeah, that's hardcore right there. That is hardcore. I am almost bothered by the fact that I just gave Trey that piece of information.
Maybe I should lace my feta with some fentanyl. That'll teach them.
Yeah, somebody's asking me to...
Not really. Don't do that, kids.
Somebody's asking me to Google how to pronounce the word and go to the audio pronunciation. Maybe I'll do that during the break and we will find out. But I am sorry that you are having a possible thief situation. So I don't know. It's like wild, wild west in this. It's in all buildings, but specifically our building sometime. So I wish you nothing but luck moving forward because I know your salads are important to you.
Well, and speaking of things devolving into savage circumstance over the deep freeze 3 months ago, we are dealing with a serious crisis in the upstairs bathroom here because the flushability of these urinals is at an all-time low, and the stale number one that I was griping about 2 weeks ago has only gotten worse. And now those urinals don't flush at all. So the stale, rancid number one, a lot of which has been here for at least a season, is now a week older. And I know we're trying to fix air conditionings around here, making no efforts on the blind still, that if I'm not tying up manually with twine every day, just means that I'm sitting in a dark room. That urinal situation on the fourth floor is not good.
Yeah. Wow. All right. So lots of good news from Trey to start the show. And I can only add to it, Trey, by suggesting that maybe the Longhorns go to the Cheez-It Bowl. No, that doesn't help.
Yeah.
That really doesn't help.
I saw this.
At all.
The Cheez-It Bowl is actually a better bowl than the name would suggest.
That's
the funny thing.
Yeah. It's a better bowl overall. But in looking at some bowl projections, and this is from 24/7 Sports. Shout out to Jeff Howe and the crew there at horns247.com if you want to check them out. But the bowl projection here is the Cheez-It Bowl, Texas NC State. That would, for you as a Longhorn fan, as I say that, does that immediately say to you, okay, failure of a season, disappointing season? Like, what do you immediately think when I say that?
It makes me not want to waste time on college football next year.
Wow.
Cheez-It Bowl versus NC State. Hard pass.
Not going to do it for you.
I mean, if we're going Cheez-It Bowl, it's got to be an opponent that has a little bit more luster than that.
So this leads us right to me, that projection leads us to sort of the biggest question fans always have. Any fan of any football team is looking for, you know, what's an acceptable record? What's a better than average? You know, what's better than you're expecting, lower than you're expecting? If I hear Cheez-It Bowl against NC State, doesn't that tell us that Texas goes 9-3 or worse? Isn't that kind of what that regular? Could you go 10-2 and get to that bowl?
Now the Cheez-It Bowl is not the Camping World Bowl, right? Those are two different things.
I believe that's
okay,
true.
Okay, so the Cheez-It Bowl probably means 8-4, 9-3 at best, but probably more like an 8 or 7 win season.
Okay,
but
wow.
eight wins is where I have Texas right now, so it does make sense.
All right, so right now you've got Texas in theory, let's say losing to Oklahoma, Iowa State, but then two other games. Somewhere else on that schedule.
Yes. One of West Virginia and Kansas State.
Okay.
With the possibility of one of those non-conference games, whether it's Louisiana or Arkansas. Probably Louisiana. But there could be another opponent on the Big 12 schedule that trims them up, too.
Okay. So that is the projection right now that they're talking about, and obviously way too early bowl projections. But just to give you an idea of what some people are thinking of, for Texas, the Cheez-It Bowl and NC State is where they're projecting. As you get into those almost New Year's Day type of bowls, but you're not quite at that level with the Cheez-It Bowl, obviously.
Yeah, there's the Duke's Mayo Bowl apparently coming up this year. Don't even care about that one. How about the Alamo Bowl? Texas finally gets to dodge that one. They had this that as an Oregon Oklahoma State matchup. That would be interesting.
Right. And because there's another one. For whatever the Alamo Bowl has become, the Cheez-It Bowl is a slot below that. So this projection would almost be suggesting that Oklahoma State also beats Texas.
Yeah. These bowl projections have A&M playing in the Outback Bowl versus Iowa, Chad, which I think would mean a slightly disappointing season for you guys. We've talked about how much your schedule eases up this year. And even some of your more difficult games do happen at home. So Outback Bowl seems like they have A&M losing, I don't know, at least two and maybe even three games.
Yeah, it says, so they're saying in this scenario, losses to Bama, Ole Miss, and LSU keep the Aggies out of the New Year's Six. So that would make them, it's about the same discussion, it's make them about a 9-3 team.
Okay.
Because the Outback is just out of, they're the one that's, I guess technically at that, there's one at that stadium, the Citrus Bowl or whatever it is. I think there's one that happens on New Year's Day at the same place, but Outback is not it. Citrus is, they have Penn State, Florida in that one. That would be just getting into the New Year's Six, but this would be, you know, slightly kicking the Aggies out. The one game there, a couple games there, Ole Miss and LSU would be those interesting matchups. A&M, what is it? It's 2021. So A&M is going to Baton Rouge this year. That's obviously going to be tough. And then how the two Mississippi programs look this year is going to be a big factor. They would go to Oxford, I believe, and host Mississippi State. So how those two games go will be huge for just, you know, what kind of season it can be for A&M. I think, you know, projecting the Alabama game as a loss is obviously a realistic thing right now. A&M needs to just hope to put up a fight against Bama right now.
I'm still not totally convinced that LSU is going to turn things around this year. They had their second wave of major coaching changes across the board under Ed O for the second time in two off seasons. Like, those things aren't easy to bounce back from, and they ended up so off kilter last year. I'm not going to be surprised if LSU is more middle of the pack within their division this season, and A&M is significantly better than them. Now, games in Baton Rouge are difficult regardless of how good or bad LSU is, but I think that is a very winnable game for the Aggies, and anybody who's chalking it up as a loss is not looking enough into where these two programs are right now.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. And, of course, until they rearrange that schedule, which it doesn't seem like they would ever do, that is always a game that's at the end of the year. That is Saturday, November 27th. So whatever LSU has become, whatever A&M has become, they will face each other to end the regular season. So some bowl projections we're taking a look at today. Texas in the Cheez-It Bowl against NC State. You'd have to consider that a little bit of a disappointing season maybe in the first year, or maybe you don't. Let us know what you're thinking. If you're a Longhorn fan right now, would a 3- or 4-loss campaign, depending on how it looks, would it be acceptable to you in Coach Sark's first year? We'll talk about that. Also, Coach Sark's first year is going to include a complexity that no other Texas coach has had to deal with, and that would be NIL. Some things happened here at the Capitol over the weekend. We'll talk about what that could mean and when the big date is coming where things may change. Then in the crap bag, I give you some good and bad news if you dig boxing. Don't move. It's the Horn.
Shirts and Skins.
Tuesday. If it's Tuesday, that might mean that Trey's got a podcast to talk about, and he's going to connect some musical dots for you to try to get there. Trey, why Brown Sugar?
Name of this song is Brown Sugar, as you just said, Chad, and Brown Sugar, sugar in general, one of those things that are added to a lot of processed foods. That is part of the subject matter in my latest episode from Books on Pod. Check it out at booksonpod.com. The author is George Zidan. His book, Ingredients, The Strange Chemistry of What We Put In Us and On Us. He explores the ins and outs of processed foods, sunscreen, chocolate, coffee, cigarettes versus e-cigs, and a whole lot more. Explores the good from the bad and where that point of moderation is with a lot of these things. Check it out. It's a very fascinating book. I think the conversation is pretty good as well. Check it out at booksonpod.com. And by the way, that is a new and improved booksonpod.com where you can actually search through episodes by author last name, book title. You can search by subject. I think it'll be well worth your while to visit booksonpod.com.
Very cool. Check that out. A lot of stuff going on this Tuesday. Coming up at 1, our weekly conversation with Jeff Ward of jeffwardshow.com. What does he think of the Jaden Blue story? Also, we'll ask him about what we're going to get into here in just a second with this NIL name, image, and likeness that did pass the Texas House. Before we get there, Trey, multiple listeners have been trying to help you out, and I've been sent multiple little keys and things of how to pronounce the word F-E-T-A when describing cheese, and apparently the hard T-H sound in the middle is not required, and feta cheese is the pronunciation for the cheese.
Have a little bit more respect for Greek people is all I would say to
you. I'm just telling
you. Have a little bit more respect for those who are not exactly like you.
I'm just telling you.
I will call Zach Christodoulidis, which I'm not even sure if that's how you pronounce his last name, who is Greek, who can correct all of you since he actually comes from the country that I'm going to assume created feta cheese way back in the day.
There it is. All right. Now I'm starting to hear it too, listeners. Yeah, now I'm starting to hear it. All right. So whoever stole Trey's cheese, we hope they will not continue to do that because I do not need my co-host on some kind of a, you know, so I don't need the lack of cheese. I don't need a lack of trust of his fellow man going into the show. It's just not going to produce positive shows. So I hope this stops immediately and people stop stealing your cheese.
The irony, Chad, is I'm reading a book right now that is actually giving me a little bit of optimism toward my fellow man, that we are, in fact, hardwired to be good to one another versus evil to one another. And then I come in here today to make my salad, and somebody stole more of my feta.
That's not good. Not good. All right. So if you have any thoughts on that or the Longhorn Bowl projection we mentioned or any other stuff we get to, it is the Specs text line 337-3776. I know you'll have some thoughts on name, image, and likeness coming up. By the way, our man Chris Bennett was just honest today. He said, hearing Texas in the Cheez-It Bowl makes me want to puke.
I know. It doesn't feel good.
It does not.
It just does seem like one of those Bush League bowl games. It's not a terrible bowl game. I mean, it's better than the Texas Bowl. It's not as good as the Alamo Bowl, but it's better than the Texas Bowl. But it feels like a downgrade even from the Texas Bowl because the name is so, pun intended, cheesy.
Yeah, and it'll help. It helps, I think, a fan base try to set those expectations of if your team ended up in that bowl, would you consider that hitting the mark, making the mark? What would you consider that during a season? Another one of our listeners, Dan, shout out to Dan. He says that going 9-3 for Texas would be acceptable if they beat OU or Iowa State. Then 9-3 would be acceptable. See, that's where I would turn it around on Dan and say, wait a second, you're telling me they split those two games. So they lose to one of those teams. You'd be okay with them losing to two other teams that aren't Oklahoma or Iowa State.
Because my expectations are diminished this year, Chad, I would actually be better off. And also based on what we've seen the last 4 years, where Texas jumps up and wins games that people don't give them a chance in, but then also lose games inexplicably that they should be winning pretty handily.
Right.
I would be more okay this year with Texas losing to Oklahoma and Iowa State and beating everybody else in the schedule and finishing 10-2, because that shows that they are starting to get there where the on-field result is matching the talent level.
Now, I think that would be an acceptable year, and that's a year that won't get you in the Cheez-It Bowl.
Correct.
10-2 lose to those two teams. The Cheez-It Bowl is not where you end up.
Yeah, we're probably playing in the Alamo Bowl again, but it'll feel better than last year's Alamo Bowl appearance.
Yeah, and the Alamo Bowl is different than it used to be.
Right.
It's hard to reset your brain that way if you live in the state of Texas, but that is a more big-time bowl than it was.
Sure.
So we've talked a little bit of bowl projections. Also, we've been projecting the world of college football for a couple big dates that are coming up. And now, Trey, it feels like we're starting to crystallize and clarify what these dates are. We know June 1st is a big one. Next week. In fact, it is next Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken. We're 1 week away from June 1st, which will be the first day of the end of the dead period, beginning of the recruiting cycle again, however you want to look at it. Official visits can happen, all of that stuff. But then there's another day out there. It looks like July 1st will be really important. You've been following this story closely, I know. The NIL discussions over at the Capitol, apparently they finally got this done. They finally got it all pushed through and signed and sealed and delivered?
Yes, they have. It looks like the House, as of Sunday, did approve the bill that started out in the Senate that would allow college athletes to begin making money off of name, image, and likeness for this upcoming season. It passed the House, Chad, with a 117-27 vote.
All right.
Now, there were a couple of amendments made to this bill in its passage through the House. One is disallowing athletes to utilize the services of agents, which I don't necessarily think is a bad thing, to try and keep agents out of that world as much as possible.
Might make sense.
And then they also, and this is one that I'm a big fan of, to level the playing field with when some of these other state laws are going into effect, it moved the date up from when college athletes can start to capitalize on this from September 1st to July 1st. So we now fall in line with, I want to say it's 6 or 7 other states who begin to allow name, image, and likeness profiteering on July 1st.
So if it's July 1st for the state of Texas, let me assume it's basically July 1st for some of these other states. So when we get into July, I don't think anybody's going to have their media days before July 1st. I think everybody does it after that. We know that the Big 12 media days are going to be the 14th and 15th of July, and I'm sure the SEC is right before, right after that, and so on and so forth. So, Trey, we're going to have some of the Power Fives show up at their media days where some of the athletes will be able to benefit from name, image, and likeness. Some will not. At this point, the Texas players would be able to benefit. Ohio State players would not.
Although Ohio has finally started to get the ball rolling on coming up with something.
That is excellent.
Yeah.
Alabama and LSU and pretty much all the teams in the SEC that arrive in, where is it, Hoover, Alabama or whatever, I think they'll pretty much all have that opportunity, just like pretty much all the Big 12 will. But now those are questions that like media folks would have for athletes that, and hopefully it's just this one year, but that will be in place 2 weeks, essentially, for Big 12 players. What kind of questions come up about that? How does that change their lives starting July 1st? So they can't have agents going in. And then what else are we reading? They're not. We knew this one, but you're not allowed to peddle certain things.
Right.
Right, so if you're a college athlete?
Athletes would be able to get paid for everything from promotional appearances to product endorsements to autograph sessions. But the stipulations on what they're allowed to endorse includes no gambling sites. Seems pretty obvious.
Yep.
Or illegal firearms. So I guess legal firearms are in play, which is interesting considering that we've also now decided to allow people to carry their weapons without any sort of permitting. That happened sometime within the last week. Student athletes are not allowed to engage in commercial activities which contradict institutional honor codes. So I guess you can get away with more at, I don't know, Texas Tech and SFA than you can the BYU. The Rices and,
right.
Well, I was going to say the Baylors of the world, but we know what Baylor is capable of. So, yeah, I guess that's discretionary. Well, what's allowed in that regard?
I mentioned BYU because we know they have an honor code specifically.
Yeah.
That we.
I'm just trying to think of like private schools that are rooted in religion or whatever.
So you're telling me that a college athlete theoretically could advertise for a gun store?
Yeah. As long as they're not involved in a legal gun store. Yeah, gun trafficking.
Interesting. What about when you get into the honor code stuff, strip club? Probably not.
Strip club is probably over the line.
Once I'm 21, if I'm a 21-year-old college athlete, I can drink, I could go, because a lot of those places are 21 or older. I've read, never been to them, obviously. But if that's true, then could I be the spokesperson? I can't imagine that would be allowed.
It depends. Have Zach Smith and Tom Herman visited there as former assistant coaches under Urban Meyer?
Come on, man. What? Well, I guess the next question might be a massage parlor. But we wanted to ask that question. So July 1st could be, looks like it will be the big day. I think that makes sense timing-wise because, like we talked about, 3 days before the season starts on September 4th, probably not a good time to start that. But the best word to me you said in all of that, Trey, is autographs.
Right.
I think that part is massive. If I'm the athlete, there's no more of this random person asks me for my autograph and I don't get to choose when that autograph matters and when I get paid for said autograph.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to sit me down for 30 minutes if I'm a big-time athlete. Hey, here's a whole bunch of mini helmets for you to sign. Hey, here's a whole bunch of footballs for you to sign. Well, okay, at some point, like now you're going to be able to set something up and go, look, man, this we're going to have you out at this mall and blah, 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 and you're going to get blank for it. You're going to get money for sitting there and doing it because it's you. It's your, you know, people are benefiting off of your autograph.
I think the autograph thing can become a slippery slope, though, where guys are getting money for autographs that they're not necessarily signing tooth and nail. They're not signing all of these. It becomes a bit of a stamp process at a certain point.
True, but I'm sure that also exists at the level above that.
Probably so. I mean, ultimately, it's not. Not the end of the world, but I think that's probably an area where some of the richer schools, some of the more financially well-off schools can skirt the rules a bit by slipping guys some dough for their autographs. Maybe, I mean, because we don't have a dollar amount on how much you can charge for an autograph. We're in a capitalistic society, right? And I assume that this qualifies as such. That you could charge, I don't know, $1,000 for one autograph if you really wanted to?
Yeah, we've heard
somebody's willing to pay that?
We've heard about those famous summer jobs,
right?
For college athletes.
Exactly.
Over the summer, could I show up to a mall for 3 hours sign autographs, and then they just decide that the fee that somebody's willing to pay me is 10 grand.
But you can't set a flat fee for an autograph because Trevor Lawrence's autograph is worth more than the third string center on Clemson's team last year.
No, but I'm saying flat fee for the session. Just say, we'll pay you this much to show up and sign autographs.
But even the flat fee for the set, I mean, I understand what the concept of flat fee is, but guys will be able to charge different things for an hour-long session where they're sitting at a table signing autographs for fans.
Yeah, it could be a different situation. If it could be like at the spring game or whatever, if people, because they've laid out tables of Longhorns that sign your posters and stuff, they can orchestrate that and not charge any, and not the people don't have to pay.
Hopefully.
But somebody might end up paying those students for sitting there and signing.
Hopefully when those Texas basketball players have to show up for that pregame where it's 1,000 degrees outside and they have to come over and interview with us in a pregame show, they get paid a little bit of dough now, Chad.
Hopefully, yes.
Because I went through the line a couple years ago and I asked Jace Febris, and I think I also asked Kai Jones. He may have been a freshman then. I said, "Are you guys getting paid a little bit for this?" And they're like, "No."
Yeah.
You could hear the slight disgruntlement in their voice that they were being required to do it.
Yeah, of course they're not.
And I understand it, by the way. I'm not taking shots at them. I totally get why they might be a little bit annoyed that they're basically having to do this as a sort of goodwill gesture.
Absolutely. All right, so that is done as of the weekend. State of Texas getting some NIL figured out, so that's even more that Steve Sarkisian and Jimbo Fisher and Gary Patterson and coaches all over this state are going to have to figure out as we move forward, and it looks like July 1st is that big day. All right, coming up, 1 o'clock, we'll talk with Jeff Ward of the Jeff Ward Show, get his thoughts on that. Also, this Jaden Blue story. What does Jeff Ward think when he hears about a high school running back that decides to opt out of his senior year? We'll get his thoughts on that. Up next in the crab bag, some good and bad news in the world of boxing and a documentary I'm really excited about, but the question is, are all of you excited about it, or has the time passed on this guy? We'll talk about it on the Horn.
Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey.
I did not know which house on Grunge Street you were visiting until he started singing. That's got to be Smashing Pumpkins.
Oh, yeah, Chad. This song is called Mayonnaise.
Ah, yes.
Mayonnaise is one of those preserved items, and food preservation is part of the topic of today's new episode of BooksOnPod.com. The author is George Zidane. His book is Ingredients, The Strange Chemistry of What We Put In Us and On Us. We talk all about processed foods, sunscreen, coffee, cigs, and e-cigs. Find out the good from the bad and what that level of moderation is. You can check it out on the newly revamped website, booksonpod.com.
I grew up eating a lot of mayonnaise. Thankfully, I don't do it as much as I used to, but boy, I grew up a lot of Miracle Whip. Some real mayonnaise, but mainly I was a Miracle Whip kid. Oh, man, I used to put it on hot dogs. It was a confusing time.
So Miracle Whip ruined mayonnaise for my younger brother, Mike, who accidentally had Miracle Whip at one point. And then associated all mayonnaise with Miracle Whip going forward. Still does to this day. Won't try mayonnaise. Now, I don't hate mayonnaise like he does, but I'm a mustard guy.
Right.
So I'll do mayonnaise with mustard, but mayonnaise by itself is a bit much for me.
The combo is what I like to go with on burgers. I like to go mayo and mustard on a burger. It's a good combo.
Hugh Lewis, of all people, taught me the value of mustard with mayonnaise.
Really?
Used to bring in these turkey Munster mustard mayonnaise sandwiches.
Yep.
They were so freaking good.
Hugh Lewis was he was a sneaky expert on making sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't let everybody know about it, But if he was nice enough to offer you like a bite of a sandwich, like he didn't eat a half. Hey man, you want a half a sandwich? And you're like passed out. It's so good. It's like the best sandwich you've ever had. Because we were just young kids that didn't know how to make sandwiches. So Hugh taught us. Shout out to Hugh Lewis, wherever he is today. Hope he's doing well and making great sandwiches. Check that out. Booksonpod.com for Trey's great podcast. Coming up, our weekly conversation with Jeff Ward at 1. Right now, though, we have a lot of good text rolling in on the Specs text line. We'll get to some more of those and also some good and bad news in boxing. Here we go with the crap bag.
Chad's crap bag.
Crap bag. If you need an easy way to remember it, just think of a bag of crap.
Brought to you by AV Consultations, 255-8678, 255-8678, or go to avconsultations.com. Someone has texted, Miracle Whip is an abomination. Wow. All right.
I agree. I don't like the taste of Miracle Whip.
Opinions roll in there. We'll get some more opinions from you coming up here in just a second after I give you this quick update. So if you are a boxing fan, your good news is we actually had a unified champion over the weekend. Boxing doesn't do this very often. This is only the sixth time it's happened. Young man named Josh Taylor defeated Jose Ramirez. It was a pretty good fight. Josh, with a couple of knockdowns, that spelled the difference. He is now a unified champ at like 140 or so on the pounds, and he's got four belts. Not many guys have that. So that's good news. Here's your bad news. We're going to have to sit through another Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder fight. Because Wilder apparently has a good lawyer, and they got arbitration into this, and now they've decided they have to fight a third time. It'll be July 24th, and so we won't get Fury and Joshua, which would have unified the heavyweight belts. But for those of you that are American boxing fans, and you want an American champion, what you need to hope for is that Deontay Wilder has learned something from these two Fury fights, and he can come back and take back that WBC belt. Then maybe he and Joshua can unify things. I hope that happens, but I don't know if Deontay Wilder is varied enough, has enough tools to beat Tyson Fury. I hope he does. But Fury wore him out in that last fight. And normally in boxing, you don't turn that around that fast. But it's July 24th for that fight. Also, if you're a boxing fan, I'm kind of taking your temperature today because the Mike Tyson documentary debuts tonight on ABC. It's tonight, and it is next Tuesday. Trey, in 2021, with all that you know about him, all that you have heard about him, and all the things that have been out there, is this still appealing? Do you think this has a Last Dance kind of feel to it, like we all got excited about the Michael Jordan documentary? Do you think this is just me and like boxing fans and fight fans that are interested in this, and I'm just a nerd for documentaries? Or do you think the sports world is going to pay attention tonight?
No, he's one of the most electric sports figures of all time. There should be some appeal here. It's not being hyped nearly as much as The Last Dance was, nor are we going through a pandemic where we're all shut into our respective houses, so it's not going to be as widely viewed. But considering that they're condensing everything to two episodes, and it felt like The Last Dance, they probably could have gotten done in an episode or two less, I bet it's going to be action-packed from beginning to end.
I'm hoping so. I mean, I hope it's a really good documentary. They get, you know, Mike to sit down today and talk about a lot of it. The great thing about Tyson, whatever you think of him, he's been so honest and forthright with everything that's happened to him with that one-man show and all the interviews I've seen for the last few years. That is tonight on ABC at 7 o'clock. So if you have no interest in the NBA, and we'll get to when those games are, there's three of them tonight. But if you don't care about basketball, and maybe you remember Mike Tyson, and maybe you're into boxing and Tyson, that is tonight on ABC. Also, on the entertainment side of it, we have chosen our movie to review this week. Coming up on Thursday, it's one I haven't seen. Trey's choice this week is White Men Can't Jump. For some reason, I just have never seen this movie. And by that, I mean, Trey, I've never seen 30 straight seconds of this movie. I've never seen half a scene of this movie.
Is this like me with Titanic, that even though you haven't seen the movie, you know what happens in the movie?
That is not the case. I have no clue.
Okay.
Don't have a clue what it's about.
Great.
Other than basketball. I mean, I know it's about basketball, and I know the cast.
And a white guy that can't jump.
Basic cast, right. That part has been spoiled in the title. But other than that, I'm ready for that. So Thursday at 1, we'll review White Men Can't Jump, and it is coming on a Stars channel, I believe, this afternoon, because you know I'm always looking for the cheap way to watch the movie. So we'll do that on Thursday. Also, a quick piece of good crap bag news on the way out. Even if you don't care about pro wrestling, it has been announced that the WWE is going back on the road to full arenas. So it's huge news for all of us, even if you don't care about wrestling. If you do, they're starting in Texas. It's a 25-date tour. They will have a little run in Houston, Dallas, and Fort Worth in July. So WWE will be back traveling around as they normally would in July. So that tells me things are getting back to normal. It's great news for them, but I think that's great news for all of us that we're getting full crowds, 100% capacity, and Vince and the crew are going to be back on the road.
Yeah, you know, it's not necessarily the positive canary in the coal mine that we're seeing the WWE getting back out there in places like Texas and Florida, but it's good to see that that sort of normalcy is returning. I will repeat myself from yesterday, seeing Madison Square Garden getting closer to capacity and similar things happening out in California and Illinois and some of these other areas that shut down more than most over the last 14 to 15 months now. Seeing them return to normal, I think, is one of the greatest indicators of where we're headed over the next couple months.
Yeah, really the best day for me is probably going to be when I hear that WWE goes back to Madison Square Garden.
Absolutely.
That's going to be a big night. That's going to be huge for a lot of levels. And goes back out to California, too. Goes back out to some of the big venues they like out there, to sure. Staples. So hopefully those kind of things can start to happen. There's your crap bag for a Tuesday. Do it every day about 12:45. All the things that just happen to be rattling around in my head. Up next, we'll find out what's rattling around in Jeff Ward's head. If you haven't checked it out, go to jeffwardshow.com for more info on his show. He joins us every Tuesday to talk about whatever we can think of. We'll go with a little Jaden Blue. We'll go with a little NIL and then see where it takes us. Don't move. It's the Horn.